Now we come in chapter 11 of Leviticus to what I'm sure many of you are going to agree is one of the most unusual chapters that we have in the Bible. Actually now, as we leave the 10th chapter of Leviticus, we've come to what might be called a radical bifurcation in this book. The subject matter is no longer offerings and priests, but it changes from priests to people, from offerings to God to food for man, from worship before God to walk in the world. And the change is made, if you'll note, from the sacred to what is called the secular without any change of pace, any thought that there's anything different. We make today a false distinction between the sacred and the secular. We think that if it's in the church, why, it's sacred. And I don't care what it is. Even gossip in the church seems to be sacred. And that if it's done outside, that it's secular. Now, I don't care who you are or what you're doing. You can wash dishes to the glory of God. You can dig a ditch to the glory of God. Someone has said, I want to dig a ditch so straight and true that even God can look it through. Anything you do, friends, and you can't make a distinction between sacred and secular. Well, he just moves right out from that which we'd call sacred to that which is secular. Now, what is it that makes this chapter so unusual? Well, it's this. God gives a diet for the children of Israel to follow. And his people are to eat certain things. And they're to eat what he puts on the menu, and they're to not eat what he keeps off the menu. In fact, I think maybe I ought to ask a question. Here is an interrogation. Listen to this. Could the God of this vast universe be interested in what his creatures have for dinner? Could the one who orders all of creation prepare a menu for man? Now let me make a declaration, for this chapter will bear it out. God was, and he's interested in the details of the lives of his people. There's no detail that's too minute to escape his interest and concern. Someone said to the late Dr. G. Campbell Morgan years ago, do you think we ought to pray about the little things in our lives? And Dr. Morgan, in his characteristic manner, said, Madam, can you mention anything in your life that's big to God? May I say to you, you and I can divide in our lives big problems, little problems. Your problems and my problems are not divided that way before God. They're just little problems. And he wants us to bring everything to him in prayer. Worry about nothing, pray about everything, was the injunction of Paul to the Philippians. Now, here in this menu that's given, and we're going to say some things about it, it has a very real and practical aspect. The fact of the matter is, we'll expect that what God tells his people they're to eat will be good. What he tells them not to eat will not be good. And that there will be a health factor here. Now, you and I are going to find great spiritual lessons here. Because when God gives the people here, they can eat certain animals, they cannot eat other animals. They can eat certain fish and not eat other fish. They can eat certain birds, but not other birds. You will find that all the way through here. God forbade the eating of certain animals and permitted the eating of others. And there is a health factor involved here. And it was not a superstitious, it was more than a religious rite to make this distinction. Now, since God prescribed certain animals and he made a prohibition concerning others, there must be some benefit in following it. And history should demonstrate that God acted in an arbitrary fashion in setting up a line of separation between the clean and unclean, but that when he did act arbitrarily, he did it for the good of his people. Now, does history afford such illustrations as that? Well, the very interesting thing is the animals which were forbidden to be eaten were largely unclean feeders. And another factor that we should note is that the rejected animals are more liable to disease than others. The unclean animal carries a parasite. Now, let me read a statement made by Dr. S.H. Kellogg. I'm quoting him now. He says, "One of the greatest discoveries of modern science is the fact that a large number of diseases to which animals are liable are due to the presence of low forms of parasitic life. To such diseases, those which are unclean in their feeding will be especially exposed, while none will perhaps be found wholly exempt." And another discovery of recent times, which has a no less important bearing on the question raised by this chapter, is the new ascertained fact that many of these parasitic diseases are common to both animals and man, and may be communicated from the former to the latter. That's the end of the quotation. And he goes on, however, to show specific cases. Now he mentions, for instance, that the flesh of swine, they have the parasitic trichinae, and that turkeys have the diphtheria, and they can communicate it to man, and horses have the loathsome disease known as the glanders. Now, evidently Moses didn't know this, and certainly the physicians in Egypt didn't know it, but God knew it. And God made this distinction. Now, does this work out in history? Well, it does. But let me give another quotation from Dr. Noel DeMuzzi of the Paris Academy of Medicine way back in 1885. Listen to him. "The idea of parasitic and infectious maladies, which has conquered so great a position in modern pathology, appears to have greatly occupied the mind of Moses and to have dominated all his hygienic rules. He excluded from Hebrew dietary animals particularly liable to parasites. And as it's in the blood that the germs or spores of infectious disease circulate, he orders that they must be drained of their blood before serving for food." How did Moses know that? Well, Moses didn't know it, but you see, God did. This has worked out in history. The plague, for instance, that was desolating Europe years ago. And again, I'm quoting from Dr. Kellogg. He says, "The Jews so universally escaped infection that by their exemption, the popular suspicion was excited into fury, and they were accused of causing the fearful mortality among their Gentile neighbors by poisoning the wells and springs. And they enjoyed almost total immunity at that time of the plague." And then Professor Hosmer writes, "Throughout the entire history of Israel, the wisdom of the ancient lawgivers in these respects has been remarkably shown. In times of pestilence, the Jews have suffered far less than others. As regards longevity and general health, they have in every age been noteworthy. And at the present day in the life insurance offices, the life of a Jew is said to be worth much more than that of men of other stocks." And then Dr. Behrens in Prussia, he says, "The mean duration of Jewish life averages 5 years more than that of the general population." Now, of course, today, with the Jew breaking over on this diet, why, the gap has been closed. But actually, there are times when their lifespan was twice that of their Gentile neighbors. I could give more quotations than this, but you need to note here that there was a very real basis for God giving these laws on diet, and that there was a health factor that was involved here. Today, though, we're told very definitely that you can eat anything you want to. If you'll notice that Paul said, Romans 14:14, I know and am persuaded by the Lord Jesus that there's nothing unclean of itself, but to him that esteemeth anything to be unclean, to him it's unclean. They can rattlesnake meat down in San Antonio, Texas. Now, I don't know about you, but if you're going to have me over for dinner, let's not have a can of rattlesnake meat. I wouldn't care for it. Have a notion you wouldn't either, but apparently somebody's eating it. And then in 1 Corinthians 8:8, but meat commandeth us not to God. For neither if we eat are we the better, neither if we eat not are we the worse. It's nonsense today to talk about there's some spiritual value in eating and or not eating a certain food. In fact, it's a superstition when you approach it like that. Though whatever we do, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God. Now let's turn and look at this, because this is a great chapter in many, many ways. And we have come now to a new section, and we're going to see holiness in the daily life of God's people. Now we have here in chapter 11 the food of God's people. We'll have clean and unclean animals on the land, clean and unclean creatures in the waters, clean and unclean flying creatures in the air, and then clean and unclean creeping creatures on the ground. And there's some bugs you can eat if you want to. I don't care for them either. We're told whatever you want to eat, you eat. Well, there are a lot of these things I don't want to eat.